Salutations, folks. We're back. Indy Cornrows Courtside returns with another special guest. Candace Buckner from the Indianapolis Star joins us. Candace, thanks for taking the time. Good to have somebody from the world of big newspaper on air. What's going on?
Thanks for having me. Nothing much, man. How are you?
Pretty good. I just want to start off with the most recent Pacer game. Take on the Grizzlies on Monday, I think. And Lance Stephenson, born ready, puts up the triple-double. I know that that's something that he's been waiting on for a long time, and you had a couple interactions with him. Let's bring that up right to the table. What were the interactions you had with Lance Stephenson during the course of that night?
It's interesting because just on a typical night after a game inside Pacers locker room, whether it's home or away, the horde usually goes first to George and Hibbert. But especially at home, George gets the first crowd. Louise gets a couple of the late guys, and then Hibbert. But on that night, Paul did the rare thing of taking his shower first. And this is probably way too much details for people who probably don't care about it. But George went to take his shower first so that Lance could take on the big horde. I actually thought that was a cool thing to do, just to make sure that he got his love, he got his attention. And it's a little thing, but I just thought that was a kind of a cool act because Paul just wanted his guy to get his love. So on that night, it was a little difficult to get to infiltrate the crush around Lance, but he was good all night. I missed some of the first part, but you know, Bob Kravitz was there and he was saying how good he was, and then I came in later to try to get some stuff that other people wouldn't have from Lance. And again, he was still good, but he's always kind of been that way. He's very easy to deal with, and he's really sticking to the script about it's all about the team. He doesn't want to think too much about the future. Yes, he wants to stay here, but he doesn't worry about the contract. So he's saying all the right things. His agent should be proud. And on that night, he was just very excited. You could just tell in all the words that he said, but also just his body language. He was just an excited kid.
And I know that earlier in the night at the scorer's table, he looked to you asking if an assist counted, and I think he was hunting that one a little bit.
He was running back, you know, doing the count it signal, and they wouldn't count it. He threw up his arms, and then when there was like a break in action, he looked again at the scorer's table, and we made eye contact, and he mouthed, "Did it count?" And I said, "No," and I tried to show the too many dribbles. Because Paul took, I think, two or three dribbles to get to the rack after he passed it to him, but he wanted it. He definitely came out looking for assist number 9 and 10 immediately, and he didn't get it on his first couple chances because George took too many dribbles, darn him, and John got fouled. So and that's where that was a really good moment for Vogel, because he knows Lance. And knows that although Lance was having fun, you know, just as he knew that at that point he needed to calm him down and make him realize, like, listen, you don't have to be so demonstrative after you don't get your assist. Just play the game. And I thought what Frank told him, he said that Frank told him be true to the game, but Frank told me, you know, act like you're not trying to get the triple-double. And that's just the thing. He knew about it, and his teammates were telling him about it. Hey, you're this many away. Hey, you're two away, blah, blah, blah. But just act like you don't care. That was a little difficult for him early on, but as you can see later, after that conversation, you know, Lance nodded, he understood, and he started playing the game the way it's supposed to be played. And I really give him kudos because there was a 2-on-1 fast break later in that quarter. He easily could have dished off to George Hill to get that ninth assist, and it would have been easy. It would have been the wrong basketball play. And he didn't make it. He made the right play. And on that 2-on-1, he went to the hole and actually scored the layup. So kudos to Lance for, you know, calming down. You know, I would have been the same exact way. I'm not going to lie. If I was that close, it would have been way too tempting for anybody to pass it up. But
and that's, you know, what I was gonna. Cool. That's what I was going to say, Candace, that exact play. I was actually at this game. I was a little higher up, but on the way down the floor, it's like, okay, he's got George Hill. There's no way. He takes it to the bucket, and then he does. It's like the Lance Stevenson, the Born Ready morality play. You're watching him torn between making the right basketball play and gunning for that triple.
The angel on the left side of his shoulder won out that time. So the basketball devil was silenced on that play.
To me, he's the most fascinating player on this team. And nationally speaking, I think if people start paying attention, and with the Pacers being 8-0 as they are, I think people are going to start paying a little more attention to Lance Stevenson as a central component of this. Right now, he's averaging 14-6-6. Really good numbers for a guy in his first year as a planned starter. Is he somebody that is, I think he's the key to this season. You know what you're going to get from Paul George. David West is reliable. Roy Hibbert is what he is. Lance Stevenson was going to need to come up big this season, and so far, he's exceeded even the wildest expectations that people had for him.
Even more so with the shooting, and I know he keeps bringing up Hal Whistle in the sessions that he had with him over the summer, but really, those were three sessions. So, I don't know how much Hal has to do with Lance's progression as a shooter when you've only really worked with him, at least from what I understand from Lance, three times. So for him to be that consistent with his outside with his outside jumper, to be honest with you, last year I was on the West Coast, Pacific Northwest, so I didn't watch so many Pacers games. And what I really understood from Lance was what I saw in the playoffs, and I didn't see this jumper. And I guess a lot of Pacers fans would probably say, "Well, we didn't see it either." But for him to be that consistent outside is really the biggest surprise to me.
It's interesting because he wasn't super consistent with the three early in the year last season. It was funny. I talked to Conrad Brunner, who said something about Lance Stevenson last year or the year before when you had seen him take a jumper. He didn't jump in practice and he hit all of them, and then he jumped in the game and was way off and just bricked it. And last year at the beginning of the season, actually he did show a little bit of range that just fell totally off. What has not changed is that he is still not afraid at all to take that shot. I think that's what makes him more interesting than anything else.
You know why? Because he was born ready.
Born ready. Yes, Candace is on board. Can we only refer to him, Candace, as born ready? Because I'm trying to scrub Lance out of my vocab.
You know what? It's funny. I was around when Paul said it, but it's true. It's he said that sometimes he still goes back to that born ready, but it's okay. It's okay. We can deal with that. But the Pacers can use, that swagger and that confidence, definitely. I think Kravitz had a great column in today's paper that basically said the same thing. When they stagnate in the half court set, the only person really who has the inclination to push and to just increase the tempo is born ready. So you do need that character. You do need that asset in your lineup.
I'm glad we've made the first basically 10 minutes of this Born Ready talk, and we should spread the wealth out a little bit. Really quick, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Pacific Northwest time, because I buried the lead a little bit here. This is the first time on the show that we've had the official Indy Star beat writer, Candace Buckner, of course. I've said her name before. You might not know her backstory. Can you tell us a little about that? You came from the Columbia, and you set out in the Pacific Northwest. You spent some time in Kansas City before that. What was the trip like coming to here as the Pacers beat writer? What's your backstory?
Oh, the trip, the actual trip in a Penske truck? Or
either or.
From there to air. Okay, well, we'll start with the less boring story. I was at the Kansas City Star for a couple years, I would say six. And then in late 2011, I decided to leave that job and work on a book. And actually, that was in Indiana. That was in Northwest Indiana, Gary area, which was really enlightening and great for I didn't have deadlines, and I was a freelancer, and all it was just honing my writing skills. So if you can do it, I certainly suggest it, journalists, to just work on a book. And I always preface this, I was working on a book because I haven't finished writing it. And so from there, I got a call. Well, I actually heard about the opening with the Colombian covering the Blazers. And that's a great position. You guys don't have to be familiar with it, but out there, the last three guys who have sat in that position, they were there for a very short time. I don't know what it is about that small paper, but they give you so much freedom to write columns and other pieces outside of the Blazers, and you get noticed. It really is just a small paper. It's Vancouver, Washington. When you think of Vancouver, people think Vancouver, B.C., but it's a small paper, and you're giving such a long leash to do what you want. And I was able to get in there and cover the Blazers while they were at home. I did not travel with the team. So every time they did an event at home, every time they had a practice, a game, I was there and trying to hustle. There's a lot of things that I wish I could have done in that time to even increase my presence there as a beat reporter. But only after 11 months, I was able to come out here to Indianapolis, which I'm very happy to be here because I'm originally from the Midwest. I'm from St. Louis, and I went to Mizzou. So it's familiar here. That's what I tell everybody. You know, I'm used to Midwestern folk and the way of life here.
Yeah, it seemed like, and I will say that during the Indiana-Missouri game, I was following along with some of your tweets and trying to hold tongue a little bit because it was tough to see the Mizzou Tigers beating up on IU like they were. I want to get back to the little irony that was there because in the year that you covered the Blazers, it could have been that Roy Hibbert had Indiana not matched that offer. He could have been out in Portland. You had the chance to cover Roy. Have you talked to him about that yet?
I haven't talked to him, but boy, did they miss him last year. And they only played once in Portland because of the Eastern Conference, Western Conference still. But when the Pacers came, that for one game, whenever it was in the season, that was the big topic of, oh, wow, they could have had Roy and could have been, because the Pacers were horrendous with protecting the paint. They had an undersized center in J.J. Hickson. And really, he's a power forward. Mm-hmm. So LaMarcus Aldridge isn't going to be that guy. And LaMarcus really wanted Roy. I did talk to LaMarcus about it, and you know, he recruited and tried as much as possible to recruit Roy, and he was successful. But you know, the money was matched, and I'm sure you guys are very happy that he stayed. But they definitely could have used him in the offseason. The Blazers, one of their big acquisition was getting Robin Lopez. And that's really, they needed a bitch, and they needed a guy to patrol the paint. And they actually off to a pretty good start, so, but they definitely missed Roy and his presence last year.
Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, Candace, I'll tell you this, that when that offer came out, it was absolute panic in Indianapolis because all of a sudden there was this debate that, okay, Roy Hibbert's very valuable. Is he a max player? And I myself went back and forth on this topic two or three times because Hibbert the year before had been quote-unquote all-star center. 12-9 were the numbers with two blocks a game. And I think it was Derek Schultz, the local radio guy, who does a great job, by the way. Shameless plug that I have nothing to do with on NDE, WNDE in Indianapolis. He made the point that they've made it this far, they've tried to rebuild, and it's about now where they've got to put their money where their mouth is and give Roy Hibbert the contract. And not everybody was on board, and that's why it's amazing to see, in really a short turnaround, Hibbert become such a central defensive focus in the league to the point where Indiana is now the hardest defense to score on in the NBA.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting to me, and I'm still really understanding the market and how much guys are worth. But just being a fan of the NBA before I actually became an NBA writer, you know, you would think when you think max guys, you think of superstars in the league, guys who have complete games. And because Roy doesn't really concentrate on scoring, and maybe he doesn't concentrate on scoring because it's just a little bit more difficult. But you can see that he's worked on the offensive game. It hasn't always been pretty when he tries some of those moves and he misses at the rim. But he's getting better. But I guess you can say, and in today's terms of the NBA and how much guys are worth and paying them for what they're worth. He is a max guy because of what he brings to that end of the floor in defense.
And you look at the centers in the league, and there's nobody who defends the paint like he does. And the fact that there aren't centers inflates his value a little bit. You look at what Tyson Chandler's making, and that makes it a little easier to justify it.
Yeah, very true. You know, it's interesting that even in a down year, someone like Dwight Howard could still lead the league in rebounding. And that was last year. That's really fascinating that the game is so geared towards the smaller lineups and these stretch fours and Kevin Love's and all that good stuff. Kevin was hurt last year, so he really couldn't lead the league in rebounding.
There, because Kevin Love might have done that. Kevin Love might have done it.
The dearth of big men. So I guess you can be that big guy and a team that have that traditional front court. You are quite valuable, as Greg Oden should have been, but the injuries really ruined his career. Or hopefully he'll bounce back with Miami.
Yeah, well, hopefully maybe not this year. You give Greg a little time so Indiana can make their run. I actually want to go off what you said there, where the league is going to a small ball style. Indiana sticks out like a sore thumb in that regard. And right now, they're the last undefeated team. Their defense, we mentioned earlier, some numbers for you. The 39% that opponents are shooting. The gap between the Pacers and the number two Bulls, Indiana allowing 84.5 points per game, the Bulls somewhere 6.5 points higher, is the same as the gap between the number two Bulls and the number 10 New York Knicks. What is going on? Why is this defense so dominant, and what are you hearing the players talk about when you get the chance to discuss it with them?
Well, I think it's because of the continuity with the starting five. They've been together since last year, and I mentioned this before, but David West will tell you that they're connected. They know where each guy will be. They understand each other's roles, and it really helps having a 7'2 guy who plays intelligently on defense. He's not just trying to swat every shot and swat it out of bounds. You know, where's the point in that when you can't control the rebound? They play a physical defense with a great defensive anchor, but they're also intelligent. And it helps that they are so connected and they have such a bond together and knowing each other. Lance is physical up front. George has the length. David is always going to be that man and play physical from his position, you just can't lose with an intelligent, again, I keep stressing that, an intelligent backstopper like Roy Hibbert, who really understands and he studies defense and studies guys. So it's really not a coincidence. He's good for a reason.
People were interested in the Danny Granger, Lance Stephenson question. Stephenson's defense is another big part of why this defense as a team has been so successful. Have we put the questions of Granger starting when he gets back to bed? He's coming off the bench now, right?
He should be, and I wasn't at practice today. Today was an off day. But from what I understand, he did not practice today. Again, the whole Danny Granger comeback will take some time. And it's not going to happen this week, maybe not even next week that we'll see him on the court. But, I think it's obvious now that Lance definitely needs to stay in the starting lineup. As Bob Kravitz said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, which I believe a lot of people would agree with. Danny, he wasn't awful defensively, was he?
He wasn't awful defensively. I'm worried about his mobility. He was a very good defender the first couple of years. Lance Stephenson's, he's just different. He can guard smaller guys than Granger can, and with Paul George back there, it makes more sense that Stephenson would start, at least to me.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, Chris Copeland not getting so many minutes, maybe more, and this is just my opinion, it just may be more about defense. More than him in his shooting woes. And really, I can't say that he has shooting woes because he hasn't even been in the game to really show it. So first and foremost, they're always going to adjust the lineup for defensive purposes. So Danny fitting in with that second unit, it probably would just fit better now.
I agree. And Candace, it's unfortunate that you're, I know you're on sort of a tight schedule. 20 minutes went by real quick with you. I would love to have you back on at some other point.
Well, you know
what?
You could keep going. I'm sorry.
I can.
I know.
Yeah,
go ahead. Might as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. We'll try and keep it too long.
I don't want to sound too excited. Keep going.
We got some bonus basketball coverage. All right. Well, I'll ask that next question then, because Danny Granger, with his return looming, like right now the Pacers bench is playing so well. You take a look at C.J. Watson, such an upgrade over Augustine. Scola over Hansbrough is ridiculous. The ice cream man with those scoop shots has been tremendous for the Pacers. What role do you see guys like Orlando Johnson and Solomon Hill having? Is it a little dangerous, do you think, with the Pacers is playing as well as they have, to get Granger back into the fold? Is there a possibility that could mess up some of the continuity that they've built so far?
You know what? I don't think so. Well, hey, when he comes back, you have to give him some time because he has to get his legs and his game timing under him. So he has to take somebody's minutes. And just the other day, Vogel was regretting not giving Scola as many minutes as he would like. He wants Scola on the floor a little bit more. And the minutes with Solomon and Orlando, that's going to be tough too, because so far they've been producing. But Danny has to have time. So I don't know where that comes from. Obviously, he'll probably, I think the last couple of games, Solomon was the guy off the bench. So Hill and Orlando, you may see their minutes drop. But that's a dilemma, but you have to give Danny some time.
Yeah, you need to give Danny the time. That's why I'm a little curious to see if the old Danny Granger is still in there somewhere, because he was always more of a volume shooter when he had the chance to be in the lineup. And even if you go back 2 years ago, his last relevant basketball moment, most of the season for the Pacers was spent trying to figure out how to involve Danny Granger and rein him back to operate within the flow of an offense. By the end of the year, it had gone well, but there was a long period of time when Granger just wasn't able to get comfortable in that role. And that's what I'm worried about. There are only so many shots to go around, especially with George's emergence, with Stevenson's emergence, David West doing David West things. Where are Danny's shots going to come from?
You know, if the order of the lineup just gets all screwy and that second unit just kind of takes a step back, you can always depend on that starting five coming back after halftime. Hopefully the score won't be too out of control, but they play the majority of the second half anyway. So I think a lot of the experimentation will happen in that second quarter, and it could be rough early on, but I don't think, well, I think the starting lineup is, again, I go back to that continuity again. I think they're so bonded together that they can overcome any of the growing pains with, you know, getting Danny acclimated back into the lineup. So where those shots are going to come from? Well, you know, it's the Lance lineup even in the second unit. So I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know, but they're going to have to figure it out eventually.
Yeah, we'll leave it to them. I don't want to have to worry about it because there are too many good options there. I think that that's part of the thing that makes these guys so good. They're 8-0 again. As somebody who's watched the Pacers for the past couple of years where that's not been the case, and especially before the past couple of years where they were just bad, it's really cool that they are where they are. Looking at the rest of the East, it's been disappointing how the other teams have done. The Heat are obviously going to be there. The Bulls seem like they'll be okay. But no one else in the East has been impressive really at all. What's going on there?
No. It's just, you know, you would have figured that the Brooklyn experiment, that was going to take some time, and they're all about, hey, just get us to the playoffs anyway. You would have hoped a little bit more out of the New York Knicks, and especially with the Pacers going off to New York next week. that you would have thought, wow, this is going to be a really great road test. They got Chicago, they got New York, and they got Boston. Like, you really want to see them play against, solid Eastern Conference teams.
Oh, I just think the Knicks are bad. I don't know if the Knicks are good.
Well, they had promise, and I don't know what their problem is. But yeah, and you would have poked a little bit more out of Detroit, but the Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings experiment may not mesh as well as early either. But again, it's 8 games, 7 games into the season for some teams, and it's still only November. All that stuff will take some time. But it's interesting to see, like, San Antonio at 7-1 and the Pacers at 8-0, the two teams that really understand the power of, or the agony of Game 7 last year. They actually picked up where they left off, and maybe they were the most inspired teams throughout that offseason, so it should be a surprise that they're doing so well out of the gate.
Yeah, the sky is not falling for the rest of these Eastern teams. The Pacers started off horribly last year, and I understand that completely. But it looks like, for the Pacers' side, that they are doggedly pursuing that number one seed in the East, and they're off to a good start in doing that. Is that something that they've talked about as much as it's been made a deal in practice? It sounds like that's an explicit goal for these guys.
Yeah, and you know what? You really don't see too many teams that will come out and say that. The Pacers haven't put a win total goal out there, but since day one, they've talked about getting that number one seed. And it makes a lot of sense. It's fascinating that they would be so open about it and have that as a talking point. That's something that Vogel has said, and that George and Wes, and they really echoed it since day one, that all these regular season games are important. So you really can't have a day off. You can't have a night off when you have that goal. So really, these games are, and although there will be a slide, you know it's going to come, a slump will come, and although people will say, well, you know, it's very it's important what you do later on, especially after the All-Star break, but the Pacers don't have that luxury if they really want that number one seed and to have a Game 7 on their home court. So it's good to see them living up to their words, because they haven't come out sluggish. They've had slow, but they haven't, you know, just come out and taken a night off in New Orleans. They're really taking these games seriously. And if you're a fan and you're watching these games, you should be excited that you're not going to see crap out there, at least so far.
Yeah, that Pelican game was the biggest example of that for me, and this is why I want to let you go on this. The Pelicans last year were the New Orleans Hornets, and Paul George basically had his coming out party against them to confirm that.
37, right?
Yeah, I'll let you take as much or as little time as you want on this. Paul George, your thoughts, because I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, you know what's very encouraging, again, just as a person who loves the NBA, it's encouraging to see a young player add so much to his game. When I watch Blake Griffin, it is so annoying to see that he still only can catch lobs and dunks. And again, he grabs rebounds and he hustles, but he has absolutely no post game.
Thank you.
Well, I should say absolutely none. But it doesn't look like he's worked on his game. Same thing with Dwight Howard,
who
has been in the league for 8 or 9 years. And how do you not have a go-to low post move? I don't know what you're working on throughout the summer, but clearly it's not showing when you're getting on the court. So to see Paul he's always had a shot, but the way he's shooting the ball right now is pretty impressive. It just shows that he takes pride in his professionalism, and he's adding so much depth to his game with the ball handling and the true leadership, but also just the shooting. Some of those shots that he was making in Brooklyn, and even every game, it's just all-star shots. He's going to be an all-star for a very long time. He could possibly be first-team All-NBA. And I know you've heard the MVP chance, and I wouldn't go that far, especially this early. But it's encouraging, if you're a fan of the game, encourage a young player, add so much depth to his game this early in his career, and he keeps getting better every single year. To actually see that in his numbers, and especially what he's doing on the court, it's great to see.
Yeah, I had Boyle on last week, and he was the first to trumpet Paul George. He said his rookie year that he thinks he could be the most talented player ever to play for the Pacers. This is a guy who watched Reggie Miller here, so he's got some perspective.
Who said that?
Mark Boyle did, the Pacers radio guy. And this is when he was. This is when he was averaging 7.5 points a game, and you know, he just saw it from early on. But as a Pacer fan last year, when all this hype was blowing up in the playoffs, superstar Paul George was totally different than the Paul George we saw a lot of the year, who was getting stripped in traffic, who's missing a bunch of shots, who disappeared for portions of a game. I thought he had this in him. I didn't think he had it so quick. It's been surprising.
Well, you know what? Even in the preseason, I was thinking, okay, he's taking a step back to let the teammates get on. How about you step up a little bit, Paul?
Yeah.
And there were still some passes where I'm thinking you're doing way too much to find that pocket pass or to make that extra pass when all you really need to do is be aggressive. But I haven't seen that in the regular season. And, yeah, you know what? You call him superstar. I wouldn't say that yet. I think that's an overused term. Maybe there's five superstars really in this league, but you know that's no slight against Paul. But he's definitely on that path. He's definitely a rising star, superstar. He could definitely be that by next season.
That's why I was worried about it, because I didn't want people labeling him that. I think we might have to agree to disagree on this one, just based on what we've seen. I don't want to anoint him a superstar, but I also didn't think he'd be putting up 25, 8-5 with two steals a game on 45, 50% shooting. It's been no one does that. No one does that besides LeBron James and Kevin Durant. No one does that.
It's been ridiculous, but again, it's early. Those numbers will taper off, as you know. Yeah. But it, again, if you're a fan of the game, and if you're a fan of these Pacers, you have to be excited that his growth has just been ridiculous. And who really would have thought a kid from Fresno State could be in this conversation of the early MVP, continuous All Star, and rising superstar. It's pretty ridiculous, but that's a credit to his hard work and what he does in the offseason.
Certainly not a bad place to leave things, Candace. I feel bad because I've kept you over longer than promised. It was a lot of fun. I would love to have you on again sometime.
All right, I appreciate you having me on, and for sure, give me a holler.
Yeah, you want to you want to plug anything before I let you go?
I have way too much stuff to plug. just read the Indianapolis Star, go to IndyStar.com. And really, I lose track of what I'm supposed to say. But, just follow along. Thanks for everybody all the folks who do follow me on Twitter.
Follow the woman on Twitter. Follow her on Twitter.
Yeah, what's the Twitter handle? Candace B. Buckner. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Follow along, kids.
There we go. That's great. I like how you had to take a little time for your Twitter handle. That'll work. Some legitimacy from the Indy Star Pacers beat reporter, Candace Buckner, one more time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
That's it, folks. For Candace Buckner, Pierce Kavanaugh saying so long, travel well. Till we meet again. Listen next time.